And a good afternoon, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday. We're live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. Hope you're having a great day. He's Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier with us as well at the studio. And Jojo, good to be back here at the Omni.
It is good to be back at the Omni. Our home away from home and a lot of fun today. And we got a packed show for you. And it's always good to be here to see our good friends at Bar Lines. And fun day. We got football tonight. The Predators are back in town. Another firing in the National Football League. Fun show. It's Elvis's birthday. I mean, what more do you need, right?
Really, what more do you need?
Right,
that is true. It is the late, great Elvis's birthday, so we'll have a little bit of a flavor there.
Oh, you know, man, I'm not going to do it.
And it's also the anniversary of the Music City Miracle.
26 years ago. It's just so crazy how
he's got something.
You think about that. 26 years ago. We're just going to get to it. I mean, our question of the day, out of the gate. Where were you when the Music City Miracle happened? Were you there? Were you watching on TV? How did you hear about it? How did you find out? Remember, Nissan Stadium only holds 69,000.
Nice.
But evidently, there were 400,000 of you that were there that day.
Yes. Our question of the day presented by Aries Tactical, your safety, your skill, your Aries Tactical. Check them out at ariestactical.com. I was at my dad's house. We were watching. It was a Saturday afternoon.
Yep.
There is some Nashville royalty about to walk in here, by the way.
Don Aaron.
That's a legend right there.
Come on now.
That is a legend.
Are we in trouble?
We might be. When he shows up, you know stuff's going down.
He can hear us? I hope he can hear us. Don Aaron. Heck yeah. Don Aaron's coming. Clear the way.
Clear the way for Don Aaron.
Yes. Oh, he's,
I mean, look, you know some big stuff's going down.
Right.
When Don
he's
shows
a standing
up,
so ovation when he comes to those doors. Don Aaron. Yeah. Come on, Don.
He's looking at us. He's looking at us.
Don
like,
Aaron.
You guys shut
all
up.
Right. Yes. Oh, man, one of our favorites.
Yeah, one of our absolute favorites.
Right.
Anyway, I was at my dad's, and we were just watching on TV there, and then the miracle happened.
Yes, and it was a crazy day. How are you, Don? Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Legend himself, yes.
Absolutely.
It was a Saturday. You know what's funny about that? I was working at Channel 2 as a cameraman at the time. My story was Titans fans were leaving and were booing the Titans before the music. That was my story. So if you see Dyson running, I put that picture out today. I'm actually turning around shooting the crowd booing. Then I see Dyson on the board take over. But what was crazy afterwards is we met, it was Nancy Hoskins and I, a former reporter at Channel 2. We ran into Ron Jaworski after the game because he was on the call. He said, man, they're calling this the Music City Miracle. I'm like, are they? And then that's how I have found out it was a Music City Miracle. What a day. And I'm telling you, one play changed the trajectory of that franchise.
It did. And let me just say this. It's a play that should have never worked.
No.
It was botched from the beginning because that was supposed to be Derek. D-Mace was the guy that had practiced it. He gets knocked out. The second guy was,
Isaac Bird?
It was either Isaac Bird or Anthony Dorsett. I can't remember. I think it was Isaac. You might be right. Isaac Bird. But so both guys were unavailable. Fisher basically pulls Dyson over and Fisher telling the story is the best because he says to Kevin, he's like, you know, have you seen home run throwback that we practice? And he's like, Coach, I don't ever pay attention to that. And so he had never practiced the play, had never run the play, like had never done anything with the play.
Right.
And he's got to go in and do this. And they short kick it, which, you know, was always a part of the equation that either Frank's going to field it or, you know, the up back Lorenzo could field it. And it just – the fact that it worked – that's the miracle. And then, you know, Mike Keith's call is what makes it so special because here's a guy that was new to the city. It was his first year with the team. You know, they had just become the Titans, become Nashville's team. And Mike has a call that is now like anytime you think Music City Miracle, you hear Mike Keith.
Oh, yeah. So what a moment. 26 years ago today. Again, our question today, where were you when the Music City Miracle happened? Were you there?
So you were on the field.
I was on the field. On the field. And then I will never forget.
Dyson was coming at you?
Coming at me. I'll never forget when they reviewed it, how quiet Nissan Stadium. I mean, it was quiet.
In the moment, like real time in the moment, did you think it was a lateral?
I had no idea. I just saw, I was shooting the crowd.
Yeah.
I just saw Dyson on the Jumbotron running behind me. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And then, boom, there it was. And that was a Music City Miracle. I had no idea. Now, you first watched the tape of that. You're like, oh, it's illegal. It's illegal. Yeah. Then you break. Then they did
that
the
looks
science
like a forward pass.
They did the science on it, and it was from where he threw it to where you catch it, and it's illegal. It was a legal play.
What's so funny is I would love to see the review of that with today's technology, because I think they'd have it reviewed in probably 30 seconds.
But didn't a sports science show do this?
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
and they measured the lines
yep.
and everything. I mean, now anybody in the city of Buffalo.
Right.
We'll tell you that it's a forward pass. Everybody else that wants to look at the tape will tell you that it was a lateral.
You know, I think we did a segment one time of what happened had that play not worked. Where would the Titans have been?
I don't know. They wouldn't have gone to the Super Bowl.
No, and they still wouldn't have. They'd been far away from the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
One of the few teams that had never been to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy what that just – it. One of the top plays in NFL history happened across the river. And, again, we talk about growing up here. To have an iconic NFL moment in Nashville, we had never thought we'd get a team, and then have that right there was something else. So that was just – I mean, that's a generation, man. That's 26 years ago.
Hair Metal Henry says, Don Aaron or Elvis Aaron Presley's birthday. Don't get no bigger than that.
Right. That's right. Elvis, Aaron, Presley, Don Aaron. Same yeah, day, right in front right. of us. Come on, Don. We can't do our show, Don, when you're sitting right there. Legend, right?
The absolute legend.
He's going to have us arrested.
Probably.
Hey, Chris, how are you? Good to see you.
All we know right. everyone here. Justin in Greenbrier says, I was sitting in my parents' living room all by myself and mad as a wet hen that my team was about to lose this game. And then the miracle play happened. I went from mad to a jaw on the floor in 30 seconds. I went through a lot of different emotions because if you remember, Al Del Greco had kicked a go-ahead field goal that was, I mean, looked like it was going to be the game winner. And didn't Buffalo, like, hit a big pass to –
Oh, they control. Once they were able to control Javon Kearse,
yeah.
they owned that game. They owned that game. They ran the ball down the field and shoved it down their throat and then had the game. They had all the momentum. All the momentum. Remember Kearse when he sacked Rob Johnson in the end zone? Good Lord, man. But once Buffalo was able to figure out Javon Kearse, they took control of the game and then until the last play.
Yeah. A lot of people are – I'm just going to go ahead and address this. A lot of people are asking if we can play it. We are not Titans Radio, so we do not have the rights to play
no.
it. So we can play the TV call, but we cannot play the one that everybody knows, and that is
– But we are – oh, we got him. Mike Keith will be with us at 1:45 today.
Okay, cool. Perfect.
So the guy – so Mike Keith will do
– We got something.
Mike Keith will redo the call at 1:45.
Yeah, well, that's what we'll do. We'll have Mike redo it at 1:45.
Chase will be Pat Ryan.
I'll be Pat Ryan. He's yeah. got something.
Yeah.
He's got something.
Oh, my goodness. What a day.
Oh, what a day. 615.
Maduro, come on.
737-1025. Is our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Also, another coach firing with Mike McDaniel out in Miami. A little surprised by that, but I've seen a report that says they're close to hiring a GM. My guess is they know who that is. They asked the new GM, would you keep Mike, and he said no.
Well, okay.
Which I'm – look, we've seen it here and how that works. If you're hiring a GM – It should be up to the GM if the coach stays or not.
I wonder how much influence Troy Aikman has.
I don't know.
If they
is
would,
he consulting?
If Stephen
is he...
Ross went to Aikman and said, what do you think about my team? He's like, I think Mike McDaniel coaching in capri pants isn't working. We need to get rid of this. and that's it. Because, I mean, I would love to have Troy Aikman consult with me on a hiring, right? I mean, it's Troy Aikman.
Sure.
He knows football. He's involved in football. He probably went and said, look, it's not working. Your quarterback's not working, and you need a whole new reset. So,
Look, that is the problem, is the quarterback. Okay, so here's another question that I will throw to you and I'll throw to the listeners. Would you take Mike McDaniel as the offensive coordinator for the Titans?
100%.
I would.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, if it's not Matt Nagy, and let's say you hire Robert Saleh and McDaniel's the OC, sign me up.
I watched the Hard Knocks with the Dolphins in the 22 season.
Yep, me too.
Or was it 23? When did we go down and see Will Levis? 23 season.
Yeah.
He's relatable. Players like him, but it's just like, I'm going to take advantage of you. And players will take advantage of you. Hell, we did in college, took advantage of our coach, right? So you need that stern figure as a head coach. I think he's relatable as an offensive coordinator. I'd love to see him work with Cam. The guy's genius. Got great plays. Just need somebody to execute that. Tua was not the guy for him. Down there didn't work out. But who knows? I don't know what kind of relationship Matt Nagy and Mike McDaniel have. We'll find. Look, it's another Mike, right? Jeez Louise.
You're right.
Another Mike coming to town. Man. So I don't know. But I would take him in a heartbeat.
615-737-1025. So we have at 12:30, Tom Luganbill is going to join us. We'll talk college football playoff with him as it gets back underway tonight between Ole Miss and Miami. And then, as you mentioned, at 1:45, Mike Keith will join us. At 2 o'clock, Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. We'll talk some hockey with him. We're live today at Bar Lines at the Omni Nashville Hotel. 615-737-1025. It's Chase and Big Joe, 1025 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 1025 The Game here on this Thursday, January 8th, 1935 in Tupelo, Mississippi. Elvis Aaron Presley was born.
Great day, man. Great day in our history.
What were the first words he said?
He said, man, it's hot down here. No, it's January. He's like, man, it's cold down here in Tupelo. I got to get up to Memphis and do some things up here. You know, I'll call Sam Phillips and get Johnny Cash up here.
Told Mom and Daddy.
I said, man. Oh, man. I said, Elvis, you see that rocket launch last night?
It's just it's crazy. Let's see, so he'd be 91. So
you had to go to the
I did.
You had to go to your phone calculator.
Well, don't call me out, man. Come on.
That's all right. We're very transparent on this show. Oh goodness. I said, man, my birthday today. I said, you know, it's funny, he still, despite the circumstances, could be alive. I mean, like John Lennon could be alive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy the impact they had in the short time on this earth.
Indeed. 615-737-1025. Kenny the Mailman has a story about the Music City Miracle. Kenny, what's up?
Chase, when Joe imitates Elvis, it really sounds like Johnny Bravo.
That's a good
check
point.
Check that out sometime. I'll tell you my story real quick. Have y'all ever heard what happened to Jeff Jarrett? I would love for y'all to get in touch with him. A couple of days after this happened, he wrestled in Buffalo.
He wore White Sox jersey.
Yeah, he express mailed an actual, instead of just getting a blue jersey, he got a Titans White Sox jersey and went out in it. And he says, that's one of the few times in his wrestling career he thought, maybe I went a little too far with this.
he thought he was going to die. Like, he legit was like the heat that people had. I remember that. I was watching it, and he walked out with a Wycheck jersey on. And I think he's told this story before. I think he needed, like, security to get out of the building.
Yeah, they started, like, taking apart chairs and throwing chair parts at him and things like that. I would love for him to tell that story. But, listen, this proved to me that the people on my route love me. I was delivering mail in the Richland Place condos, apartments, and the breezeway. I was so mad. I usually turn the radio off if I know they're going to lose, but I just stuck it in my pocket. And when you go on a breezeway in an apartment, the sounds are three times louder. Have y'all ever lived in an apartment?
Yeah.
And when they started running it back, I just started screaming. And for three floors, people came out every door going, Kitty, are you okay? What's wrong? Should we call the doctor? Are you okay? Is somebody attacking you? And I just kept pointing at my radio. I was so excited I couldn't even get the words out. They just scored. So it proved to me if I needed my people in a moment's notice, they'd come to my aid. But that's all.
Oh, nice.
Hey, y'all have a great day.
All right, thank you,
you
buddy.
Too. Thank you, Kenny. A couple of news and notes when it comes to the Titans. And, again, keep those coming with your Music City Miracle stories. Jeffrey Simmons was named the NFL's Defensive Player of the Month.
All right.
And the Tennessee Titans, according to Ian Rappaport, have requested to interview Arthur Smith.
Yeah, bring him home.
So there you go.
Bring him home. Come home, Arthur.
You figured he would.
Well, you know, we and I had him on in August of 24. He called us during Steelers training camp, which was great. And there was a little thing in his voice that day of maybe one day, but he was going to enjoy the moment. Because he had just been let go of the Falcons. It was his first year as OC for the Steelers. And was like, hey, I'm going to enjoy the moment up here. And you know, when he's playoffs and they could beat Houston and keep moving on. But I've always liked Art Smith.
So they've requested Jeff Hafley, the defensive coordinator with the Packers. I don't dislike him. I've read a little bit about him, and I know Tim's brought him up before. Don't dislike him.
Wait, was that the Boston College coach who quit? He right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and went to the Packers.
That's
yeah,
right. Well,
that,
I don't think
I don't. He, that was one step ahead of the jailer.
Yes,
that's what that was. They've also requested to interview 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh.
Oh, bring all the chickens home to roost, baby.
Yep. So basically every name everybody's had on their list is going to come in and interview.
Yeah, good.
Or they're going to do the virtual interview first, I guess.
Bring them in. Let's go.
I still think it's going to be Matt Nagy until it's not. But
100%.
But, like, again, if it's Saleh, I'm good. If it's Arthur, I'd be good with that. I like Robert Flores. I don't think they're going to go that route. I think there's
– Where's he?
He's with the Vikings. He's the defensive coordinator. But remember, he sued the league.
Brian Flores.
What'd I say?
Robert.
Well, who's that? Brian, yeah.
Isn't Robert on ESPN?
Yes, I think.
Okay. Well, bring him in too, hell. He might know more than – he probably knows more than we do, which isn't a lot.
Brian Flores.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. You know, I heard TD and I were talking about this. I know the Ravens have asked to interview him. I still feel like the Raiders could be the landing spot for Flores and Daboll because of Brady.
Do they have a relationship?
Yeah.
Flores and Daboll?
Yeah. Yeah, they work together in New England.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So, they're all Belichick farmhands. Or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, farmhand's a good one to put. That's a good one.
but yeah, so that could be it. Bob wants to weigh in on the Titans head coaching search. Bob, what you got?
I got two dream scenarios. Either Stefanski with Daboll. If Stefanski comes, he brings Schwartz with him. And, of course, everybody keeps Bones. Or get Saleh and bring him and keep Denard Wilson.
I'd like that. I will take that. Thank you. I would take that in a heartbeat.
So
I like that.
What I have gathered is the only way Jim Schwartz could be in play, I heard Karski talking about this, is if whoever the Browns hire decides they don't want to keep him. But he's under contract, and Jimmy Haslam has said that he'd like to keep Jim Schwartz.
Well, I think it's if I'm a head coach going in, I want all my people. I want all my people. I don't want any of your people.
Sure.
And that's it. So I don't know. But I really like – if you came to me and said, Joe, who would you take right now? I'd take Robert Saleh.
Yeah.
I think this team needs a punch in the face. I think they need a disciplinarian. I need somebody to ride these guys' butts. I need somebody to come in there and just be –
kind of a leader of men.
There you go.
Yeah. Doesn't put up with BS.
Thank you.
Kind of has a little bit of an attitude sometimes.
Big time. Will fight you in a heartbeat.
You know who that reminds me of?
I think so.
Mike Vrabel.
Exactly. Right?
I mean, that's exactly
what I don't need your buddy.
Right.
I don't need your buddy. Your buddy could be your position coach. That's fine. But as the leader of that football team, I want somebody who's just going to bust your ass.
Right.
And that's Robert Saleh.
I think Flores is that way. I think – but again, I don't think she's going to go that route.
No.
I think he's going to get a job, but I think his choices are going to be limited because of you're going to have some owners that are so loyal to the league that it's like, yeah.
Somebody, I was listening to some national show flipping through, and they're like, Robert Saleh's best opportunities at Arizona because they'll just leave him alone. There's no pressure. Is that what we're doing now? You take a job because there's no pressure? Don't you want to get
it? Isn't there always pressure?
Always, right? So why'd you take the Arizona job? Why, there's no pressure. You're not expected to win. Come on, man. Stop that. I would love to see Robert Saleh as a new head. It's going to be Nagy. We know that. But if you ask me,
Saleh. I'm not going to say it's 100% Nagy. I would just say he's, in my mind, the favorite.
Oh, I think it's a done.
I've been saying, like, I think that's who it's going to be, and I'll stand by that. But, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it's 100%.
He's the guy.
And here's why I say that. If I'm Mike Borgonzi, I have to put my Chiefs bias aside, and he was asked about it, and treat everybody equally.
You can't.
I know. But, like, if Kevin Stefanski comes in and blows you away, I think you have to pay attention to that. Because, again, you have to look at it as not are they a good fit for, you know, me and I know them. Are they a good fit for this team? Are they a good fit for Cam Ward? Because that is a part of the interview process right now.
Well, until he's not announced, we'll go. But
sure.
I like Saleh and then Art Smith 1 and 2. That's what I like. But what's going to hurt Art Smith, though, is that in Atlanta, he failed to develop a quarterback. He put everything on Desmond Ridder. It was terrible. But, again, Robert Saleh with the Jets wasn't very good. And they all said, look, if I had a chance to do it again, I'm doing it my way, not their way. So we'll see.
615-737-1025. Real quick, Doug has a Music City Miracle story. Doug, what you got?
Hey, guys, I may have told this before, but it was pretty amazing. I had a pretty good niche on getting tickets. I was denied a PSL, so my niche would be any away team. I'd go get tickets that were sent to them for sales. I'd bring them back to Tennessee, and I'd go to the game. Well, for the Music City Miracle, girlfriend then, wife now, did the same thing for me. She got me 4 tickets. I'm sitting on the rail, and where I'm sitting is the girlfriend's wife's row of the Buffalo Bills players. So we're having good banter back and forth during the whole time. Hey, good play, and laughing, clapping. Even I put my drinks in all the little cup holders so they could have them. They said, are these for us? Yeah, we're all friends. Well, the Music City Miracle happened. And I have a Sony Watchman. That's pretty cool to have one. As I'm sitting there watching the miracle, I'm dating myself with that Sony Watchman. I know I can see that the play looked like it was not an illegal forward pass. So everybody's looking at me, leaning on my back. I had to put my foot on the rail because I almost get pushed out on the field. And then when he said it's a touchdown, I'm looking at him right there. And when he said it's a touchdown, immediately the Buffalo Bills wives turned into haters. We were this, we were trash, we were garbage. But that's my deal, is I was sitting with them and everything was cool until that referee said it's a touchdown. And I'm sitting there watching it on my TV because I'm thinking it's close, it looks good to me. And that's my Buffalo Bills Music City Miracle. And how I got the tickets was I sent to New York to get their tickets that they didn't sell. Brought him back here and sit right there and watch the mirror.
My man. Good job, buddy.
Hey, I got a question for you guys before we go out.
Yeah, what's
that? Team has to be sold. I want you, Chase, and you, Joe, to sell an Eskimo and ice cream sandwich. How do you sell the Titans to a coach? Give me your best pitch, and I'll listen.
Well, that's a whole other segment we got to get
into. Thank you,
Doug.
Oh, let me think on that, and after Tom, Luke, and Bill will do that.
Perfect.
That work?
Yep.
College football playoff returns tonight. We will talk to Tom. Coming up next, Chase and Big Joe, presented by the Omni on 102.5 The Game.
Well done, Dr. Craig.
Chase and Big Joe, 102.5
yes!
The Game on this Thursday. The college football playoff resumes tonight. Ole Miss will play Miami in the Fiesta Bowl. And to talk more about that, we say hello to Tom Luganville from ESPN. Tom, how you doing?
You guys going down to Luganville, Texas?
Yeah, we are.
That's what I hear.
Yes.
How are we doing, boys?
We're doing fantastic. This should be a good one tonight, but I want to start with this. How has Ole Miss and these players been able to overcome the distraction that has surrounded them this entire postseason run with Lane leaving for LSU and having some of their assistant coaches that are going back and forth. I mean, it's pretty remarkable that they've gotten to this point having that distraction over them.
Well, it's a great reflection of what the greatest team sport ever invented is all about. And I think that what you've got with these kids is they've never worried about things they can't control. They've kept their focus on things they can control. So if it doesn't impact them, and they can't control whether it impacts them, don't worry about it. Just go about your business. And, you know, I think when you have your play caller on both sides of the ball, that helps minimize distractions because the message is the same each and every day, each and every week. And so I've been impressed, and not just in this playoff run, but you got to go back to the last 4 or 5 weeks of the regular season. And when all of this started about the rumor mill, and not one time did those kids flinch. So I've been really, really impressed with their leadership, their maturity. And like I said, worrying about what they can control, don't worry about what you can't.
Are we, because of this, going to see a point where college football or the NCAA or whoever needs to do it finally goes, all right, we got to stop this? Because I don't think that Lane's necessarily in the wrong for, you know, advancing his career and taking a job that he thought was better. Just like I don't think it's wrong for a player to, you know, if they feel like they can go to another school and have a better opportunity. But it's all about the timing. It should happen after the playoff. It should happen after all this. So does this make some people wake up and go, all right, we got to change this. We got to put some rules in place?
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of layers to what you're asking there. And it's one of the reasons why this sport is the wild, wild west right now. I mean, just imagine if you ran the National Football League the way college football's run right now. It would come crumbling down within a year. The problem is the only way to stay out of court is to collectively bargain. Because the moment the NCAA right now, who has no teeth, the moment they start saying, well, no, we're going to impose this rule, we're going to impose that rule, then the players are going to lawyer up, right? And they're going to cite antitrust, and you're just going to go into this vicious cycle over and over and over again. So what we've got to do is we've got to come up with a way of collectively bargaining where the institutions and the players come together and they agree on what's accepted, what's not accepted, what are the rules, what's the governance, how is it going to be policed, what are you obligated to do when you sign a contract? Because right now we have none of that. I mean, look at what just happened at the University of Washington. And, I mean, it's unbelievable with what Damon Williams just did. And there's nobody to enforce it. There's nobody to police it. There's nobody to govern it. And until we decide to collectively bargain, we're going to stay in this perpetual cycle of the wild, wild west with no rules and no guidelines and no restrictions. And unfortunately, also, there's not going to be any deterrent for any type of conduct that we're seeing right now.
It's crazy. Tom Luganbill is with us on the Chasing Big Joe Show. Tom, let's talk a little football tonight. Miami taking a little miss. I can't get enough, Tom, of the Miami front seven on defense. I mean, yeah. You've seen them all year long. I mean, shoot that in my veins. Those guys, at the way they're playing and everything, how impressive. You've seen them all year long. This is not new to you. How impressive is that front seven for Miami?
Well, I'll tell you, guys, I was at the Cotton Bowl standing on the sideline watching the game, and Miami should have been arrested for felony assault for what they did to Ohio State, because I have never seen an Ohio State team get their tail so physically kicked ever. And I've done a lot of Ohio State games, and we've all watched them for years and years and years. The thing that Miami's got going for them, and it's not just the defensive front. Obviously, Reuben Bain, Akeem Mezidor, they're going to get a defensive front back tonight. But they are relishing this underdog role, right? I mean, think about the last 6 to 8 weeks. What has all the talk been about? It's not been about how talented Miami is. It's been, well, should they get in the playoff? Should Notre Dame be in the playoff? Well, Miami didn't play in the ACC championship game, so why are they in the playoff? And then when you watch them, you have to start acknowledging, holy smokes, these guys are talented. And if you look at the course of the season, the only team that's beat Miami has been Miami. When they lost to Louisville and SMU, they had a combined 6 turnovers. Everybody else, they have boat raced. And so it's the defensive front, their ability to wear you out up front. But really what gets glossed over, I think, is the offensive line is the best offensive line in college football. And if you look at them the last 2 weeks of the playoff, they have absolutely owned the fourth quarter against Texas A&M and against Ohio State on the ground. They just wear you into submission.
Oh, absolutely. That A&M game was something else, the way they were in there and just shut up 110,000 people. Tom Luganville's with us on the Chase and Big Joe show. Let's talk Ole Miss tonight, Tom. And look, Chase asked you about, you know, what's going on there and everything that's happening there. But at the core, this is a very, very good football team. And I'm not surprised they're there. And a lot of people are, which kind of befuddles me, and I don't understand why.
Well, you know, I think too much stock was put into Lane Kiffin's influence on the success of the football team. The reality of the situation is, when you watch the Georgia game last week, it wouldn't have mattered if Lane Kiffin was coaching that team or not. In fact, I could make an argument that people would have taken some unnecessary risks in his coaching approach that could have been a detriment in that game. Listen, they've got great players. The quarterback is an absolute difference maker. I mean, he put on a clinic of quarterback play against the University of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge tonight, is how does Miami's defensive front that we just discussed, how do they make Trinidad Chambliss play from within the pocket? Because he is at his best when things break down, when he's able to get outside, when he pulls a rabbit out of the hat, and he's using his eyes and his feet and his arm. That's where he's at his best. If Miami can limit those plays and force him to play from within the pocket, that's Miami's best opportunity, because when he gets loose, he is a handful.
Tom, if Miami wins, are you going to go to the national championship game at Hard Rock Stadium?
Oh, absolutely. I'll be working probably pregame, halftime, and postgame for ACC Network. I mean, and it's easy to sit there and say, okay, well, that's a home game for Miami, but nobody ever shows up at Miami's home games anyway.
So right.
It's really the national championship game that happens to be played in Miami, and Miami might be one of the teams.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Real quick, tomorrow night is Oregon, Indiana, and Chase and I have talked about this, Tom. We're still having a tough time wrapping in our mind that Indiana football is that dominant, and we'll get to see it again tomorrow night. What's your thoughts on Indiana and the job that Cignetti's done there?
They're the best prepared, best coached team in college football. When you look at how they play the game, and I'm going to give you two stats here. These are astounding statistical anomalies. Number one on offense, Indiana has only turned the ball over 8 times the entire year.
Wow.
The entire year. On defense, they've only had 11 penalties the entire season. Imagine that. Now think about that. 11 penalties on defense the entire year. So when you play Indiana, they just wait for you to screw it up. They're talented, but they don't give up explosive plays on defense. They don't take negative plays on offense. They don't false start. They don't jump off side. The kicking game is flawless. So what ends up happening is you have to go in and you have to play to their level of efficiency and execution, and nobody's been able to match that.
Tom Luganville is with us from ESPN. If Indiana finishes the story, will Kirk Cignetti be kind of the best short-term legendary coach in the history of college football? And what I mean by that is, I mean, you look at all the names we all mentioned, they had long careers, and he has, but, you know, he just really came on the scene, you know, after being an assistant with Saban and others, and then, you know, his last few years at Cincinnati, all of a sudden it's like, bam. So could that put him in a kind of a hemisphere of his own?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is unprecedented. I mean, this is something that's never even come close to being accomplished by a program like Indiana with their history. And I think, you know, with Coach Cignetti, it just further proves that there's great football coaches everywhere. Just because you take a different path to where you want to get to doesn't mean you're not worthy of a big job when it comes around. And he worked himself up steadily and earned each and every job that he got through performance and production. You could say the same thing about Pete Golding at Ole Miss. I mean, hell, he was at Delta State forever, right?
Yeah.
And then you're a good football coach. Somebody finds you, good recruiter, good evaluator of talent, and then you find yourself in the right place at the right time, and you've got yourself a magic potion.
I think it's just a great story. And, Tom, also, you know, with Trinidad Chambliss coming from Division II, how many Power 4 coaches are now scouring Division? I know they before they were doing it, but really now scouring Division II, Division III, NAIA for that diamond in the rough, because I think this is a great story with that young man.
It is a great story. And I think, you know, whether it's Division II, whether it's the FCS level, whether it's the Group of Five level, the smart coaches and the smart evaluators that are fishing in the transfer portal, they are going to take guys who have performed with a large sample size before they're going to take somebody who is a high-profile name coming out of high school. And so when you watch a guy and you say, well, holy smokes, this guy's won a championship. He's been a three-year starter. He's been a two-year starter. He's played at a high level. He's won a lot of football games. Okay, it might not sound flashy if you sit there and say, okay, we're going to target this guy. But if the guy is productive, he should be at the top of the list. That's where Kurt Cignetti got it right. You know, people don't realize that Curtis Rourke, you know, when he took him out of Ohio, they had won back-to-back 10-win seasons. And Curtis Rourke was the best quarterback in the MAC, but he's not a high-profile name. But Kurt Cignetti says, oh, I got to find a guy that can play. He's played a lot. What did he then go do? Well, he gets Josh Gruber now, coming out of TCU after being a three-year starter. So that's what it's all about. It's production performance and a large sample size, and it doesn't really matter what level it's at.
That's a great thing. He is the eternal colonel, Tom Lugenbill. Tom, we appreciate your thoughts, man. We love seeing you on TV, and I wanted to get your thoughts before the games happened.
You bet. No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Tom. Tom Lugenbill, ESPN, joining us here on the program. We'll react to some of that and look ahead to tonight in the college football playoff. Plus, we'll get back into the Titans coaching search coming up in just a little bit. It's Chase and Big Joe on this Thursday at the Omni, 102.5 in the game.
Burning love.
Can I tell you my favorite part of this song?
Sure.
The drummer. I love the fills, like the drum beat on this song and the fills in between. Like, it just works so perfect with his vocals.
It's such a great song, man.
Like, it's awesome. I sang this in karaoke the other night, and I never felt more alive.
Who did the remake? What country singer did this?
We just talked about this. It was Travis Tritt.
Travis Tritt.
Yep. And it's pretty good.
Heck yeah.
Let me pull this up. So there is a version of this song that I was obsessed with recently. It's the recording, but the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra played with it.
Oh no! And I just gotta hear that.
And just hearing those strings, like the
Dr. Crane, can you find that for us if you don't mind?
Yeah,
I need to hear
Dr. Crane. It's sure. The Royal Philharmonic. That's what it is. Burning Love. But I mean, it's so cool. Oh. Like, especially the beginning. Play it from the beginning because it's just like the build up, and then the guitar comes in, and yeah, it's just fantastic.
You've been 91 years old today.
Who wrote that?
Is that Dennis Lindy?
Maybe.
I think it's
and the Jordanaires are on it too. Like, they're still with him at that, because that's 70s Elvis, probably.
I would think early 70s. Yeah, I would think so.
In fact, that might have been one of his last hits.
I don't know. You know, he only won one Grammy. It was for a gospel album.
1972. It was 1972. Dennis Lindy. Yep.
Did you find it, Nick?
I did.
Let's go, baby.
Isn't that cool?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that is so awesome.
And they're playing with him.
Oh, man. All day.
I can see Dr. Crane singing this.
Oh. All right, here we go. Turn it up loud, Dr. Crane.
It's up.
I know it is. Pause. This sounds good.
Like, match so well with the Jordanaires.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Dr. Crane.
Good job, Dr. Crane.
I'm going to download it.
Had you heard that before?
I've never heard that in my life. But when you add strings to things like that, that's excellent.
Dr. Crane, had you heard that?
I have not. That was actually really good.
Yeah.
My dad's a big Elvis fan.
There's a whole album with the Philharmonic on it. So
he, the most important man in the 20th century, Elvis Presley.
Because
everybody up until Elvis was a double take of your father.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. And he created, I've read all this about Elvis, man. And he created go out and be an individual and go out and do your thing and everything else and be that rebel, air quotes, and then took off. And then, he's still that the foundation, the Elvis Enterprise, whatever, still makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
So the original recording of that song was Arthur Alexander. I have no idea who that is.
Double A, man.
Yeah. And then Elvis recorded it in March and April of 1972. He did part of it at RCA Hollywood and Studio B in Nashville.
He's done the one in Los Angeles. He's like, man, they're like, Elvis, we're not done yet. He's like, man, I'm going to go back to Nashville. We're just going to record Studio B. When I get back over here, we'll just say it's better in Nashville.
So the three single, so he had an American trilogy, Burn in Love / It's a Matter of Time, and then Separate Ways and Always on My Mind. So I guess Separate Ways was
not the Journey song.
No.
I'm trying to see Elvis doing Separate Ways.
I bet AI could do that.
Oh, right? So you should ask, are you doing 101 again this week?
I am.
So over at Roy's Meat Service?
Yeah.
Ask Roy about.
Jeff Roy.
Yeah. Ask Mr. Roy about the enchilada he sells over there. Was a recipe that he got from a lady whose dad had it, who Elvis bought the burrito or the enchiladas when he would come to town and stay with Colonel Parker. This is a story that Mr. Roy told me, that he would order all this enchiladas, all this Mexican food from him. He delivered over to Colonel Tom Parker's house, and the man passed away, and Jeff Roy got the recipe and sells those enchiladas.
That's pretty cool. When you look at the personnel on this recording, James Burton, one of the best session guitarists.
Was out in Brentwood.
Yeah.
From Shreveport, Louisiana.
Charlie Hodge, better known.
Chuck Hodge.
Was an American singer, vocal coach, and musician who was a confidant and best friend of Elvis Presley and lived at Graceland. Joe Esposito was
little Joe, man.
He served in the Army with Elvis.
It's killing me, man.
Emery Gordy, I know that name. He played bass.
We called him Gordy. Gordo.
Ronnie Tutt was the drummer.
Oh, King Tut. Man, King Tut was something else, man.
So wait, it wasn't the Jordanaires on the backup. I thought it was.
I don't know. We're learning all this in real time.
Richard Sturman does backup on that song.
Oh, that's why it's badass.
It says J.D. Sumner and the Stamps. Yep. Bill Basie, Ed Enoch, Donnie Sumner, Richard Sturban.
Yeah. Oom Papa, baby.
Oom Papa, Mau Mau.
Yeah. So, man, we're disturbing. Do that.
Isn't this a sports show?
No, man, we're an everything show. Give you all you need to do. But we're going to take time to honor Elvis on his 91st birthday.
0862 goes, hey, Chase, okay, Joe does all this Memphis impersonation. Can you get him to just do a terrible Charles Barkley, terrible by Charles Barkley?
I can't.
That's terrible.
Because that's good.
That's
terrible. If I know you're doing something better than me, I'm not going to steal your thunder. That's very good. My Elvis is so bad. My Elvis has turned into the Peyton Manning thing. So now you listen to Peyton Manning. He's Elvis.
I told you that, like, I can't do anything. I'm going, man.
Oh, it's the bad. Oh, yes.
Oh, good stuff. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll get back into the Titans coaching search. Plus, Mike Keith going to join us at the end of the hour, talk about the 26th anniversary of the Music City Miracle. That's all ahead in hour number two. Chase and Big Joe on this Thursday, 102.5 The Game.